Is your son Nico the reason for this book?
Yes, very much so. I think if he hadn't been born, I probably would have carried on with my very romantic view of what was happening in food in Rome, or that food just carried on in the traditional way in Italy. I might have noticed, you know, some inconsistency, some bad foods and things, but it was really having a child that I saw that adults ate one way and children were really starting to eat a very different way from the adults, with more packaged foods, more processed foods, and certainly the fast food is being marketed directly at children as well.
The Italians, they are the quintessential foodies. They are the food nation.
They are obsessed with food, that's certainly true. And people talk about food constantly and talk about the freshness. And in fact, one of the things I love about going to the market is that I'll go up to the market, I'm doing my shopping, and there will be people standing there, men and women, and they're all talking. You would think it was lyric poetry that they were reciting about the broccoli and the cabbages, and that they are so good, they're so tender, and you have to try them this way and that way. And it's been great for me building up my language skills as well. My food vocabulary is pretty good now. But I love the way that they talk about it endlessly. And it's about very simple food, very simply prepared. It's not, here I often see that there are a lot of ingredients in one dish. There's often three. If you have four or five, you're getting really fancy. And, you know, you have to think about that. So often it's things like, oh, the tomatoes, look at them. They're so fresh. They're just coming in. And all you have to do is chop them up, put them in a pan, some olive oil, a little bit of salt, and there you are. And it's true. It's really good. They're really good. So I love that they talk about food, and I love that they care about food, and they do care about food, and yet I still see that there is a big there's something very industrial happening within the food culture. In Rome is where I know the best, but in all of Italy, and in other parts of Europe as well. But I just see that it's being eroded a lot in terms of snacks. Snacking, even 10 years ago when I went there, you didn't see so many snack foods, and now you do see a lot of potato chips and things that you can just pop open quickly. And you see a lot more children, especially if they're on their own, if they're 11, 12 years old and going to school and home again by themselves, they make a little detour into the coffee bar and get some potato chips and eat it on the street while they're walking home. So that's a very new thing for them. That's a very, you know, different way from the way their parents would have lived.
There is something highly addictive about that fat sugar salt combination.
It is addictive, I agree. And it's tasty. I love french fries, I have to admit, but I kind of limit my exposure to them. But I think it's all what's around you. I just walked through a food court, and it's funny because the smell of the food court brought back memories to me of when I used to, you know, work around here in this environment, and I would have to run down there and get something to eat. And I thought, wow, it's funny. It smells so different from when I walk through a street in Rome. Sometimes at lunchtime, I can smell the tomato sauce cooking because lots of people are using it as a base for other things. Now that's a whole different smell. So I think it's just whatever you're used to as well, to a certain extent. And really, I don't know if we have to really limit anything. You know, we just have to be sensible about the fact that if you eat a huge amount of fat of any kind. If you had a huge amount of olive oil, you would probably get very sick. So why would you want to do that? But if we eat really good foods, if we, in Italy, for instance, if you can follow, people here don't have to follow an Italian diet, but so in Italy, if I follow what people eat, you know, I'll get up, I'll have a little breakfast that could involve various things, some grains, some bread or some fruit, and always a cappuccino, of course. And some days I'll have a pastry just because I want to. Then at lunch, I usually like to have a big salad at lunch, but I have lots of things in it, maybe some chicken left over from the night before, tons of vegetables. I love roasted vegetables in a salad. It's kind of a mishmash of whatever. And then I wait until dinner, and many nights, maybe four nights out of five during a weeknight, we'll have pasta or we'll have a risotto. And then we'll have something else afterwards, just a little thing. Maybe just a little omelet or a little bit of meat and some vegetables. And it's a very easy routine to get into, and I don't feel deprived of anything because I liked everything that I've eaten, and I haven't felt like, oh, I really want to have some chocolate cake. And if I wanted chocolate cake, I would say, okay, maybe on Sunday we'll have chocolate cake after dinner. So I don't think we have to decide, okay, now we're just going to eat grains and greens and that's it. You know, the days of French fries and sweet things are gone. They don't have to be. They just have to be given a place in your diet. And you can have a place for anything. Even Italians actually love French fries, but they're quite careful about them. And people often eat them, you know, with fish on a Sunday afternoon at the beach. They'll order fish and salad and a bunch of greens and a little plate of French fries that everybody shares. Everybody has a few. So I don't think anything has to be off the table.
Are you hopeful that Nico will grow up liking the good stuff?
You know, when my book came out, and of course there's a picture of what looks like a bowl of sugary cereal, he looked at it and he said, oh, that looks good.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh.
And I laughed. I said, it does, doesn't it? It looks very colorful. It looks like candy. You know, he thought it looked like candy, which is good. And it's true. It's good. So I try, it's hard for me because I've been writing a book, and so I do talk about it a lot more than probably an ordinary person would talk about it at home, and he's become a bit more aware of it than he needs to be. But I hope that he will see that he can have anything he wants to eat, but he just can't have it at any time. I told him every Thursday after school he can have a treat of any kind beyond just his regular snack. And so he chooses what he wants, but sometimes he wants a gelato, or sometimes he actually wants some fruit, or sometimes he wants a piece of chocolate. And it's not always something really junky. Sometimes it is, but I don't say anything about it because it's his time to have whatever he wants. So I hope that maybe that will give him a structure so he feels like everything has its place and you don't have to, you know, binge on something because it's forbidden. But I don't know. I'll check back with you when he's a teenager. I'll let you know.
The book is Outside the Box, Why Our Children Need Real Food, Not Food Products. I've been speaking with the author, Jeannie Marshall, and Outside the Box, published by Random House of Canada.